Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, Coach Kelly. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. I'm Dr. Deborah.
I'm Coach Kelly.
Yeah, it's so good to be here again.
I know.
It was so sort of frenetic. I got here late. I had a client right before here. I'm like, oh, no. And then you were worried. Where are you?
Well, that's
where
a problem. It's like people who are like always on time, I get worried when they're not, because then my heart, it's like, oh my God, what if something happened? And I get in like the Jewish neurotic thinking. So that's where I went, you know, in the 5 minutes that you were late.
I like your Jewish neurotic thinking. It's funny.
It's like, I was reading about this, it's like in the DNA, like to worry as like a Jewish person.
I think so too. Yeah. I have half of it, remember?
Exactly.
My left side
so half
is
neurotic.
Jewish and my right side isn't.
Or, yes.
So I switch depending on my mood.
Right.
Exactly. Sometimes it's my top half and not the bottom half.
You're right.
Who knows? I don't know if that benefits. If it's anybody or not. But yeah, so you look happy today, and I guess I know why.
Yeah, so my dad is in town. It was really cute. Like, my dad and I are so similar, and we just have so much fun, and we went hiking at the Fryman Canyon, and then today he's like, yeah, I want to do yoga. I'm like, great. We like did a yoga class. It was really cute.
How neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like my little partner in crime, you know?
Oh,
it was just
awesome.
Really fun. And he was going to be here today, but he had some work to do, which I totally get. But yeah, we've had a great time, and it's just been really sweet.
So as our repeat listeners would already know, but our new listeners may not already know, that Kelly has two boys, and one of them had a third birthday.
Yes, exactly, this weekend.
Yeah. How was it?
It was actually really good. It was really good. It was at this little train travel town at Griffith Park, this little train area, and we dressed him up in like, I should show you a picture. You'll go nuts.
Of course, you should.
It's like this train outfit with like the train hat. It was so adorable, and he loved it. And then even bigger news actually is my older one just lost not only one tooth, but two teeth. He lost them both in the front. Like, I've never heard of anybody losing, like, two at once. So I was like, Tooth Fairy's going to go broke. But, but it's, like, really cute. He, like, really believes in the Tooth Fairy. And I said to him, like, well, what does she look like? I was just curious. And he's like, she's small with wings. It was, like, really cute. He had, like, an idea of, like, Tinkerbell type, you know.
Okay, see, I really believe that children can see the Tooth Fairy, that she really does exist. Because my daughter's a fairy, you know.
Okay, so we can this is a whole other show. I'm like so into this kind of stuff too. I love that kind of stuff. I believe it. I believe that 100%.
I actually want so badly to believe it. Every day I send out to the universe, please show me a fairy. I really want to see a fairy sometime in my life.
It's so cute.
So cute. Yes.
But yeah, so he's super happy. So that was, my kids are growing up. What can I say? It's crazy.
Yay. Yeah. That happens. Well, you need a break anyway. No diarrhea or barfing through the weekend?
No.
No, every kid was okay?
Yeah, well, they've got colds, but that's okay. I can deal with that.
Okay.
That's okay. It's always a little something, but yeah.
Well, it was a really fun show that we had last week. We had author Dr. Joseph Schrand, the author of Do You Really Get Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection, an instructor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School. And it was really cool. I liked, I was actually reading a little bit more of it in his book, trying to understand fully the I Am method. But I wholeheartedly believe that empathy and compassion are the root of positive relationships. And
if
we get more of that going, I wish we could grow that as an herb here. Take a compassion herb or an empathy herb.
Pill. Exactly. Yeah. No, I thought it was really, really interesting. I liked his approach, and I know you really resonated with it too. And I liked it, the theory of mind and, you know, everything he was talking about. So if you missed that show, make sure you catch that. It's a great show on connection and how to improve your relationships.
Absolutely. So any other news for the week?
Trying to think if there's anything else that's exciting. No, nothing really. I'm happy because when my dad leaves, my husband's cousin's coming in. So it's a good, like, replacement, you know, for my dad. So that's kind of exciting.
Oh, good,
yeah,
good.
So family.
You have a family fill-up week.
And that's a good thing about living in LA. People always want to visit, which is great, you know, because it's so nice. It's like, who wouldn't? So
that's,
it's nice.
That's true. Okay, yeah. You do the honors of introducing our guest for today.
Okay, I am super excited. But before we do that, if you can give us a call at 323-203-0815. You're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Today, I am super, super, super excited to welcome Kevin McKinley. He's the author of Porn Free, How to Quit Porn and Free Your Left Hand. I love that title. And he helps men break free of porn addiction using research and tools from sociology and biology, because new evidence shows that porn is the leading secret cause of erectile dysfunction and relationship problems. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited because this subject matter is so long overdue. Just to let you know, about 8 or 10 years ago, I actually wrote a book proposal called Porn, the New Mistress.
Right.
Every single publisher, male run, turned it down.
Of course.
I could not sell it. I could sell it to like a really small house that I knew wasn't going to do anything with it. So I sit on it and think I'm going to write it someday. But yeah, to have a man actually have written this,
yes,
is going to be taken so much more seriously. So
100%.
Let's just dive in. What?
That's a sad thing, but that's important. I mean, that absolutely needs to happen, that more men talk about this, and more women too, actually.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This book owes a lot to Dr. Gail Deans, who's a professor of sociology at Wheelock College, as well as Gary Wilson, who wrote Your Brain on Porn, and they're the main guys mm-hmm. that I draw to for this. I mean, these are the giants in the field.
Wonderful. Yeah, what I like about your book too is that you're really personable and you're really candid,
yes,
about things, and it's touching to know that firsthand somebody can have this experience, share it, and help other people take the shame out of it, or actually,
yes,
even come to recognize that, oh, it is a problem and I'm not alone.
That's,
yes,
right.
So can you share a little bit, yeah, historically, personally, with our audience as to how,
yeah,
you came to write the book?
Okay, so what it ended up being was that I took a look at this porn thing and started reading about it, because it's something that I've dealt with my whole life. The average age that a boy first views porn now is 11 years old. Mm-hmm. I was 7 or 8 years old when I first saw porn. And over the course of my lifetime, I've seen over 10,000 hours of porn, and I actually counted that out. 10,000 hours in porn. If I would have done something else with that time, I would have been so much more successful
yeah,
at this point in my life. Right? So, yeah, this is a personal book for me. It's a personal struggle that I've had. I want to start by saying that it's not a religious reason for me to quit porn, although that was at one point an issue, right? This is a religious struggle, and for many men, it is a religious struggle that, you know, you're dealing with porn and you're seducted by porn, but at the same time, it's at contrast with your values and your morals.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case for me today. You know, it's a very practical reason why I'm against porn, and it's simply because that porn is the... there's a mounting body of evidence that shows that porn is the leading cause of erectile dysfunction, meaning that men are having a difficulty reaching erection or having orgasms, and it's causing problems in relationships.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. So, you know, it's so interesting because I remember my daughter was in high school. She's 20. She's going to be 23 now. And she had a guy that she was seeing, and I don't remember exactly how the context came up or something, but I said, well, like, in your generation, what's the porn factor? And she goes, like, everybody uses porn. I said, really? Like,
yes.
Oh, she said, it would be weird if a guy didn't use porn. I said, well, doesn't that bother you? Because I remember growing up with college boys and stuff and, mm-hmm. and thinking, like, I don't like that. It just makes me feel weird. Like, you walk into your boyfriend's bathroom at the dorm, and there's four stacks of Playboys. You know what they're doing when they're in the bathroom. It's like, that's my boyfriend.
Wait, what do you mean? They're reading the articles.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. That,
please.
That standard line.
Yeah.
You know? So it was very disheartening to me, because I have always thought that that has to definitely interrupt and sabotage
absolutely.
The quality of relationships.
Yeah, if I was a woman today dating, I would absolutely make it a requirement that my boyfriend does not watch porn.
Yeah.
That's such a big deal. You bring up that you know, we have porn magazines and porn stacks, and it used to be the case that porn was viewed negatively, as if porn was for guys that couldn't get with real women. So as a man, or as a woman with a boyfriend, or a man with a girlfriend, you know, why would you be watching porn? Why would you need porn? And that used to be the mentality. But interestingly, Playboy was actually the one that changed this mindset of porn being perceived as a negative thing, consequently, into something that was acceptable by using those very articles and by framing it in terms of, this is an upscale men's lifestyle magazine, not a pornographic magazine, not a dirty magazine like those pinup magazines. And it was the competition between Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler that over the course of decades changed that public perception. As Hustler became more and more hardcore in the images that it showed, Playboy became much more mainstream and acceptable.
Yeah, sure.
And now we don't even need the magazines.
Right.
Any mobile device, tablet, you can bring your cell phone into the bathroom, and no one has to know. It's
So I do have a question about that sort of quote unquote, but porn is normal. How do you respond to that if you feel like it's everywhere and, well, it's normal. Everybody does it. You know, every man I know does it. You know, how do you respond to that?
Yeah. So just because something is normal, just because something is everywhere, doesn't mean that there's no negative consequences
Absolutely.
To it. And that's what we're seeing, mm-hmm. is that this overproliferation of porn, we're actually in the middle of this great porn experiment where we've injected so much porn into the culture that we don't even talk about softcore anymore. There's no such thing as softcore porn. Mm-hmm. It's all hardcore because the mainstream culture and what we see in mainstream media is softcore porn. You turn on Game of Thrones and you have softcore sex scenes. Mm-hmm. Turn on any freely available music video on YouTube that kids can watch and it's softcore porn, essentially. Right? 10, 20 years ago, that would have been called softcore porn. Mm-hmm. But we don't even talk about it today because it's normal. It's normative.
Wow.
It's normalized.
That's so interesting. So I was just thinking about this. How do other countries view porn, and is it the same? Does it affect their relationships the same way?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Yeah,
let me think this one through a little bit. Okay, so what we're seeing is that the porn industry is actually dumping tons and tons of money into the development of mobile devices because that's what's going to open up other countries like Brazil and India, where traditionally you have a lot of family members packed into a small house. And so the men can't just have downloaded porn, mm-hmm. right? But now that you have mobile devices, they can download porn into their mobile devices, and it opens up those other countries, Brazil, India, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm, that is so interesting. So it's really accessible for anybody.
Because you have more, your private phone.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
No one knows what you're doing. And then everyone knows what you're doing.
We just assume that it's normal. And that's what's changed today is that porn is freely accessible. We have 24/7 unlimited free access to porn. It used to be that you have to pay for porn. It used to be that you would have to go down to the shady part of the town to go to the arcade and borrow your adult videos. And you don't even have to do that anymore. It's like having your porn fairy just show up and give you as much porn as you could possibly handle.
But there's 25-cent peep shows.
Yes, exactly. Remember that? And that was like softcore porn back
then,
right. Which is so interesting. So, okay, so what percent of men are using porn? I guess let's get into some numbers.
Okay, so depending on which estimates you believe, porn amounts for up to 30% of all internet traffic.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a huge company called MindGeek that's actually at the heart of all of this. And what MindGeek does is they bought out all of the different porn studios. The majority of them, right? We have what's called tube sites, and they own all these tube sites, which are essentially YouTubes for porn. And they put out all of their free content in order to hook users and viewers in, and then they sell those views and clicks to advertisers. They sell over 100 million clicks and views per day.
Wow.
And they use that as advertising. That's how they monetize this free porn.
I see. Okay. From the advertisers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there was an interesting thought that I just had. There was when I was working in treatment, and there was this woman who was in treatment, and she was a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
And I anticipated in our sessions that she would actually talk about the abuse that she experiences, the denigration, et cetera, and that she'd actually have negative feelings. She says, "Oh my God, I love my job. I just absolutely love my job." Well, how does your boyfriend handle it? She goes, "He doesn't like it that much, but, you know, he's okay with it." And I kept fishing for where she's going to tell me some negative consequence that she's having. Now, more than likely, she was in denial, and part of why she was there was for hardcore drug use while she was doing this stuff. But I was like, fascinated because 15 years ago, when I've worked with some people in the porn industry, they were saying all those things,
right?
And that it wasn't a pretty sight. And so, like, the argument to, like, many men that I've said is, why don't you think about that woman that you're actually watching and actually humanize her? And imagine if that were your daughter, if that was somebody that she might be being hurt behind the scenes, and you don't know that. And then to have heard this woman say, "No, it's cool, I like it." So, I was like, can you speak to that a little bit?
Oh, I will give you a quote from Michael Parenti, a sociologist, that said, let me briefly think about this. Michael Parenti said that the greatest tyranny or the most successful tyrannies aren't the ones that we rail against or rally against or fight against. It's the ones that have so incorporated themselves into our lives that we accept them gladly and willingly. And so we don't think that it's tyranny. We don't think that it's oppressive. Mm. And that's what's happening with porn and women, is that women are idealizing and internalizing these ideas and images from porn. And one of the great lies of the porn industry is that the women in porn love it.
Yeah.
the bitch loves it. That's how they socialize their users to accept it, is by making them think and accept this idea that this is what they want. Yeah. But it's no woman walks up and just goes, you know, I can be a lawyer, I can be a doctor, I can be a porn star.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to choose the porn star because that's the easy money. Yeah. It's not that simple. No one just loves doing porn. It's an idea and a lie that has been fed to us by the porn industry.
Yes.
That's a really good point. Yeah, thank you for making that a little bit clearer for me, because it was rather disturbing, actually. And, you know, I have a question. Go Please. Off a little bit off track here, because we're talking about porn, and we haven't really identified what we qualify as pornography.
Yes.
Like, what's the difference between nudity and pornography, right? If you have a scene in a movie, like a well-done, I've love always scene. Said that a well-done love scene will show body parts of both genders.
Right.
If they're only focusing on a specific body part of a woman, that's on the continuum of porn to me.
Right.
But if bodies are sort of portrayed equally, that it really is about their lovemaking, it seemed less pornographic to me. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a hard line to navigate. But the question here is, you know, what counts as porn? So what counts as porn? I like to direct people to what Sexual Addicts Anonymous talks about as the three circles. You have the inner circle, which is definitely porn. You have the outer circle, which is definitely not porn. And then you have this whole gray area that could or could not be porn. Mm. So what do you count as porn? And for me, what I count as porn is, well, does this lead to more porn behaviors? Now, on a practical level, is this porn or is this not? Your brain doesn't care if it's just a naked woman or a woman on Instagram posting bikini photos of herself, right? Your brain doesn't care. It counts. All it knows is that, hey, look, this is another sex opportunity. It treats it as if it were porn, whether it's a hardcore porn video or just images of scantily clad women.
Oh, that's
all right, so a woman leaning over at a freezer at the market, fully clothed, a guy walks by and starts imagining having sex
exactly
with this woman.
Right.
That's using that woman as pornography.
As pornography. Oh. That's men learn that gaze, the objectifying gaze, from porn, from music videos, from TV, from shows, because all of these directors use the same camera techniques to display a woman's body. Things like panning down, showing cleavage from above, or showing the butt. These are camera techniques that men pick up and internalize. And when you meet a woman, women know this way better than men do. What's the first thing a man does when he first meets you? He looks
you
up
and
down.
Sure.
He's assessing your viability as a sexual partner.
Yeah.
Talk about conditioning. It's so fascinating.
Absolutely.
Because
my
when
God.
I was in graduate school and, you know, as I was getting into my late 20s and early 30s, and, you know, you walk down a street where there's a construction site, right?
Yeah.
And
all the
men there are going, you know, hooting and hollering and, you know, and it's disgusting. But then I walked down one time and didn't get it, and I said, what's wrong with me?
Right.
So you talk about conditioning.
Right,
it was
it didn't
feel good, and I didn't like
it,
but not getting that attention made me feel like I was inadequate, something was wrong with me, that was the only way to capture a man's interest.
Absolutely. Yeah. So women are placed in this precarious position between a rock and a hard place of choosing to be invisible, which is what you felt that day when they didn't holler at you, or being fuckable. Which is what...
Mm-hmm. Aren't you glad you're on internet radio?
I'm absolutely
or we would
glad
have had to play. No, it's okay.
Absolutely.
It's totally fine.
It's
yeah.
perfect.
We're
for
always
segment.
Happy when somebody uses the F-bomb. We tend to not, but we really like it. So go for
no,
it.
It's
that's the case. So women are forced between these two extremes. And then you have to navigate this idea of being sexy without being called a slut.
Yes.
And that's a terrible position for any woman to be in. Especially, this is the same thing that we're putting our young girls and young women in.
Yeah.
Right? So you're 17 years old, you're 16 years old, you're not fully an adult yet, but you're not really a child, and now you're navigating this weird line between being a sex object and being innocent. So what are you going to be in?
Right, and we want our young girls to feel good about their bodies and
that's
to feel sensuous
and
to experience the beauty of who they are. But you're right. I mean, how do you navigate that in this culture that's just so porn filled?
It really is.
Culture.
Yeah,
it's,
it is.
So okay, well let's get into a little bit about what constitutes someone being quote unquote addicted to porn.
Ooh, great question. Okay, so this is one of the questions that I get a lot. You know, am I a porn addict? Guys that start looking at this stuff. come across that question pretty immediately. So, okay, well, I'm watching porn for 3 to 4 hours a day, but I don't think I'm an addict because I still have a successful, you know, relationship with my girlfriend. I'm going to grad school. I'm doing great. I'm doing great, except for the porn. I'm losing 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night because I'm using porn. But I'm not an addict because I'm doing well everywhere else in my life. And so I like to throw out that term addiction because addiction generally, the traditional meaning of addiction is that continued use in face of negative consequences and the inability to moderate your behavior. So that's what we traditionally say addiction is. But the negative consequences of porn fall upon a spectrum. It's a continuum. Yeah. You don't have to be an addict to experience the negative effects of porn. You can. It's not binary, right? It's not just, right, you're an addict, you get all the bad stuff. If you're not an addict, you're okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's sort of that paradigm, mentality, that addiction mentality. I like to use a term from the Oklahoma Native American Church. They use the word self-defeating behavior. So that's how I look at porn. Yeah. Is this a self-defeating behavior? How much time are you actually spending on porn? Just open yourself up as a man to the possibility that this thing that you're spending all this time on isn't necessarily all that good for you. Are there negative consequences to it? Yeah, take a look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that? Actually, I'd love to hear kind of what your thoughts are about the negative consequences.
Okay, so the negative consequences of porn. There's so many of them, but we can really drill them down into three major areas. It's the biological and the neurological areas, as well as the social or sociological areas of porn. So biologically, what we're seeing is that men are conditioning themselves to use porn in the same way that there's a study on rats. And if you allowed rats to have infinite and free access to food, they would get obese.
Yes.
And that's what we're seeing is that men are being sexually obese, getting sexual obesity from watching too much porn, indulging too much porn. And they're conditioning themselves to require pornography in order to have orgasms, in order to maintain erections. Mm-hmm. There's a great story about Hugh Hefner, and this has been told many, many, many times over, but this is the guy that actually helped define porn and helped create our image of beauty, our ideal standards of beauty. And he has access to all the quote-unquote hot women or the sexiest women in the world. And despite having access to them and having sex with them, having sex with several women at the same time, he's unable to reach orgasm without looking at porn.
Wow.
And, I mean, what a terrible thing. You're
so
supposed to be the most beautiful woman in the world.
Right.
And then your partner can't have an orgasm in front of you.
So is it because he needs that, like, visualization to, because he's so, like, checked out? Or what, like, he can't be quite intimate? Like, what do you feel like it is? Or is he just so conditioned with that?
Right.
What yeah.
Well, the best way I can explain this is the research is showing that it's similar to having, like, a healthy salad and broccoli versus having Mars candy bars.
Oh.
So porn is that candy bar, and it spikes. It's a super stimulus. That's the word
Got
that we
it.
Use. It's a super stimulus, and it spikes your dopamine levels and all your chemical stuff, and in such a way that real sex just can't match up to it and keep
oh
up with it.
Oh, my God.
And so real sex, and what we're finding is that men are being turned off of real sex. Men are being turned off of real women. They're not enough.
Right.
Because what is one woman, real live person in front of you compared to
This fantasy,
yeah. This unlimited amount of women that you can click on online.
And we can see this in every area of our society. It's sort of like there was a great medical director at one of the rehabs that I worked at, and he defined addiction in this way. He said, basically, when you're 5 years old and you walk down the street and you see a shiny penny on the ground and you want that penny, you're so excited, you just found a penny.
Mm-hmm.
You're tossing a ball with your dad. It feels good. You get these sort of regular, balanced little spurts of the dopamine, the serotonin, the happy chemicals in our brain. And then as you get older, you don't necessarily drop down for the penny.
No.
But you might for a quarter, eventually. Maybe only for a dollar, maybe not for $10, right? So even people who are super wealthy, super fast, who oftentimes they get to the top so quickly that they sabotage themselves because there's nothing else that will give them that sense of joy and pleasure. And so you always have to recalibrate the brain for a long period
of time
to accept boredom, mediocrity.
Oh my God, that's
crazy. Are you finding that your research shows anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the term that we use is that men are being hypersensitized to porn and desensitized to real sex, real women. It's just not enough. Because what can, you know, how can you compare, right?
Yeah.
You can click on, what we're seeing is that with internet porn today, and that's specifically what we're talking about is internet porn, you can see more naked women and see more sex acts in 5 minutes of browsing the internet than your great-grandparents ever saw in a lifetime.
It's my favorite line in your book because it stands out in my mind and it's, it makes so much sense. Like, we're not supposed to be seeing that many images, and today.
But listen to all the sayings that we have in our society, too, that are just deadly. Variety is the spice of life, right? So that you're taught at such an early age that you're not supposed to be comfortable and happy with one person long term to share your life with. I mean, there's so many competing
messages.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, I'm just thinking out loud too, in our society, like, I feel like teens especially, they feel so much more disconnected in general with sort of the texting rather than the face-to-face.
Right.
And I think porn, again, is that opportunity to sort of disconnect, you know, as versus having a partner and really kind of being intimate and really being connected. It's kind of almost easier to disconnect and sort of do your own thing. I feel like that's the way our society is too, which is so incredibly sad to me.
No, and porn is absolutely contributing to that.
Yeah, exactly. That disconnect.
We're seeing that because of the ideals that men are picking up from porn, men are learning that certain things about sex and sexuality that you wouldn't otherwise get. So you're starting to think that, okay, this is what sex is supposed to look like. But it's not. That's not what real sex looks like at all on any level.
Right.
That's
exactly.
A fabrication by the porn industry.
Yes.
And it's one particular overrepresentation of what sex could be like.
So interesting. Yeah.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we have an awesome guest here with us today, Kevin McKinley, who's the author of Porn Free, How to Quit Porn and Free Your Left Hand. It's very interesting stuff. So many questions.
I know, so many questions, and I love the email we got too, which maybe we can get to at some point also. We have an email, and I'd love your thoughts on that.
Let's do it. You want to answer an email?
Let's go.
Okay. You want to read it?
Cool, sure. Dear host, my boyfriend likes to watch a lot of porn. I'm not really okay with that, but I feel like I don't have the right to ask him to stop because he only uses it when I don't want to have sex. He would have sex every day, but I'm only interested maybe 1 to 2 times per week. He says he doesn't want to get more aroused with the porn, but sometimes when we make love, he seems to be fantasizing and doesn't seem to be as into me as he used to be. He's 28 and has been looking at porn for over 10 years. I've read that people who use a lot of porn can become desensitized to sex with an actual partner. Anyway, this is a really sore spot for us, and I don't know what to do. Please help.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean,
I know. It's like, where do you even start with that one?
I mean, this is such a common thing, and I'm seeing this very often. And women are coming to, you know, the forums online that we have, and they have the same problem. Look, my boyfriend looks at porn, but I think it's okay, kind of. I'm not okay with it, but I kind of think it's okay because everyone uses it anyway. And he only uses it when I'm not having sex with him. So we're finding that women are rationalizing their partner's porn use for them. And this is not a healthy thing. I would say that, you know, a man that's been using porn for over 10 years, he needs to change. And the reason for that is because if he doesn't, and this is a pattern that continues, right? What we're seeing with the research and the evidence is that porn use absolutely decimates a person's ability to maintain intimate relationships. Because anytime that you're mad or anytime that you're angry, you just go to the porn. Mm. Anytime that you need a release, you just go to the porn. And so rather than building these deep, lasting connections with a partner, with your friend, with your person that's in front of you, with your girlfriend, with your wife, or whomever it might be, you just go to the porn.
Right.
And it's an easy escape.
Yeah.
Yeah, many of the sex addicts who I've worked with have always described it more as a soothing mechanism, that it's not
absolutely
necessarily even so much about arousal or anything, but it's like they've learned that masturbation is a way to get rid of some feeling, just like somebody who would, you know, indulge in a lot of chocolate or do whatever just to try to calm.
That's right.
So oftentimes there's an undercurrent of anxiety and a lot of shame going on as well.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like, it's amazing that people don't look at this as like an addiction like alcohol, or, you know, it feels so normalized. Like, oh, everybody does it, it's fine. But like an alcoholic, it's like, oh, you have a problem.
And that's, you know, like, that's the space we're in, is that there is zero public consciousness about the negative effects and consequences of porn. Yeah. And this is, we're in the same place today. I liken it to the tobacco industry back in the 1950s, 1960s. We sort of felt like maybe there was some negative effects to mm-hmm. smoking tobacco and smoking cigarettes, but we couldn't prove it yet. And we couldn't show that, look, smoking tobacco causes lung cancer. And secondhand smoke causes lung cancer. There's all these issues with smoking tobaccos. But it took decades for the evidence to be enough and to be mounted and show that, hey, look, this is an issue, right? And we're covering this up, and this needs to be a public awareness thing. And so that's where we're at in porn, is that nobody thinks that porn is an issue, and we need to talk about it and open up this dialogue. We're not saying that porn is bad necessarily. Look, just open up the dialogue and just say, hey, look, maybe this thing that you're using and spending a lot of time on, maybe there's some negative consequences to it.
Sure. So how would this woman be able to coax her, did we say husband or boyfriend? Coax her boyfriend into appreciating and understanding that it bothers her, and that ought to be enough.
Right.
If he wants a relationship with her and it bothers her, that's the negative consequence right there.
Absolutely.
So is he just insensitive? Does he lack empathy? Has all this come about from his porn use? I mean, I'd just be really curious if she's had conversations with him to help him understand, look at me as the human being who you say you love. This hurts me.
Right.
Right.
Does that have a positive effect on the men that you've coached or
I don't do coaching.
Okay.
But yeah, from the men that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to a lot of them about this, what we've seen is that, look, when women try to get their partners to quit porn, you immediately have a backlash because the culture is telling you that porn is okay. So the woman becomes the enemy.
Yes.
Right? And that's what we don't want to have happen here is that, look, don't turn this into a me versus you kind of a thing. So we're in these difficult positions with porn. It's such a difficult topic. But the key thing, if you have a partner that's using porn, is really opening up that dialogue and going, look, let's just take a look, see if there are negative consequences to this. Mm-hmm. What might they be? How much time are you spending on this, for one thing? So that's where you start. And then you open up that dialogue. And part of the reason that many women are having problems is that with their husband's porn use is that it's not just the porn use. It's the lying and the hiding and the secrecy.
Right.
The secrecy that comes with that porn.
Such a good point.
Yes,
absolutely.
Right. I was just thinking while you guys were talking, my best friend from home, she told me that she had a problem with her husband using porn. They went to a therapist, and the therapist said, oh, it's fine. It's just he's fantasy, and it's not personal, and it made her feel really bad. Maybe it's me. Maybe I am overreacting. And she kind of walked out and thought, oh, gosh, it's me. Like, it's not a big deal. The therapist doesn't think it's a big deal. So it's so... it's so normalized, even with some of today's therapists. That's the sad part.
And you and I have had little bits of debates on this when it's come up in our show because,
I've changed my stance.
Have you?
Oh, 100%. Okay. Mainly because of your book, Hand to God. I mean, I came in when we first started the show a year ago, and there was a question that came up about, hey, I want to spice up my relationship. And, Deborah had a few thoughts, and I thought, oh, yeah, maybe you guys can watch porn together. And this was, a year ago. And then we had another sex specialist on who, talked about the negative effects. And after I read your book, I was like, that's it. Yeah, it made so much sense. But I think to me personally, it just became so normal that I didn't really think that it was detrimental until I really kind of sat down and thought about it.
And what I'm seeing also is that more and more women are turning to porn because they have the if you can't beat them, join them attitude.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Also the old saying of I can look but don't touch.
Right. Yes.
Right? So, all right, can't beat them, join them. So if that's the rules we're playing by. And then women are starting to get addicted because it does have that extreme impact on the neurobiology of the brain.
Right. Yeah. It's not just men. Women are experiencing the same thing. I mean, women are coming up with the same coming up against the same problems that men are having. Look, I need porn to have orgasms.
Yeah.
One woman I spoke to said that she needed to visualize herself as the man in order to have the orgasm, right? Mm. So
interesting. Yeah.
So, okay, so I guess my question is going forward, maybe to help people, they can get back to that place where they can have...
Absolutely.
Which is great. So it's like it is possible to help this addiction get back to the normal place. They just have to stop doing it.
Right.
Tell us some of the methods that you have discovered that have been successful or helpful, some of the aids to help somebody that finally says, all right, I can see that this is having a negative consequence on my life. What do I do?
Sure. So I want to start off with this. What we are seeing is that men say... 30 and older, maybe men in their 40s, mm-hmm. they're taking about 2 to 5 months to recover from the effects of porn. Men that are younger, that have grown up as the porn generation, are taking longer than the men who are older.
Because it's
taking
like instilled.
7 to 9 months because it's instilled. It's all the sex that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Drucker says, what you measure, you manage. So
yeah.
start with a porn journal, right? Notice, you know, how much you're using porn or what you're feeling, what triggers you to use porn. We use the term HALT, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. These are the stressors that cause, you know, someone to need that self-soothing and seek out porn. We also have, I have on my site, freelefthand.com/porn calculator, a little calculator that helps men just figure out how much porn you've actually used.
Oh, my God, that's interesting.
You know,
it's like a mortgage calculator.
Yeah, exactly.
How much can you spend on your mortgage and not go broke?
Right.
How much porn can you use and not get a divorce?
How much porn do you use in 1 year, for example, you know? And you calculate that out. Even if you're doing minimum wage, right?
Yeah.
You were earning minimum wage for that the hours that you spend on porn, you'd be a lot richer today.
It is so true. Well, and when you said the 10,000 hours, I think I read that book, Malcolm Gladwell, it takes 10,000 hours to become a professional. It's like you could have been a skater or like you know.
Wow.
It's like, it's so true. It's really scary how much time. And people probably don't even think about it because, you know, they're so caught up in, but I'm sure once they see that actual number, it's really, really substantial.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to ask you, what have you experienced in your, Dr. Deb, in your practice with men and women that are sex addicts or porn addicts? What do you recommend to them?
Well, I take a pretty compassionate approach to it, and I really try to help the woman understand that this is a problem that's going to take a while. It's not like you can just say,
absolutely.
This hurts my feelings, mm-hmm. stop, because if he could just stop, he probably would, but there's so much work that needs to be done to
absolutely.
Really understand.
Yeah.
So a lot of it depends on where the guy's mindset is when he walks in the door.
Absolutely.
If he's in the door, like, look at my wife, I can't believe, like everybody does this, and my use is so minimum
that's
compared
exactly
to
right.
you know,
right.
the stuff that people send me on email, and I just look at the classic, you know, man on woman,
right.
you know, some little bit of intercourse, and we don't,
exactly.
we're
no
fine.
Animals, we're
yeah, we're
exactly.
good, right? You know, so
yeah.
that's much harder than somebody who comes in and says, you know, I really want to stop, and I keep screwing up,
right.
I just keep screwing
right,
up, and
right.
so. Sometimes sex and love addicts meeting, sometimes 12-step,
right.
A lot of learning how to self-soothe. And I
right.
find that to be a really big one, like really understanding what those feelings are, using your HALT measure
yeah.
or something like that. Like, what are the needs and feelings that you
yeah.
are wanting to be
right.
attended to? And how do you learn to do that to yourself? And how do you learn to communicate with your spouse or your boyfriend or your
absolutely.
Girlfriend about when you are feeling like you're struggling, when you have that
yeah.
desire to be able to say, once she's strong enough to hear it,
mm-hmm.
you know, I really feel like using today. Help me. Let's go do something. Let's go
right.
take a walk. Let's go
that's
channel this
idea.
Into something else and try to understand it. So a lot of that kind of stuff.
So piggyback off of what you had said, going back to this email. So it's an interesting, I've heard this a lot, it's an interesting thought, like, well, I don't want to have sex, so then he goes to the porn, so
right.
what do you do if I'm not in the mood to have sex? Like, then, you know.
Well, one of the biggest things that
yeah.
men often try to sell as a need is that
uh-huh.
they have to have sex
yes.
when they feel the urge to have sex.
right.
I'm sorry, you will not die if
exactly.
you do not have an orgasm at this moment.
so
right?
true.
You know,
yeah.
so many of the things, while in general it's healthy for the human being to be sexual,
right.
you're not going to die in that moment. So to really start to understand that, no, you do not need to have sex every day. You might prefer it. You may be
uh-huh.
attracted to your partner. That may feel good. You may be using it as an outlet, but it's a preference. It's not a need. And that sometimes helps to sort
yeah.
of reorient themselves to the problem. But what do you think about that?
Well, I want to say here that part of the issue is that men have compounded masturbation and pornography. You can masturbate without porn.
Right.
That's one way to deal
right.
with
yeah.
your
yeah.
sexual urges. But for most men, porn is so synonymous with masturbation
yeah, sure.
that if you feel like, you know, I have to have an orgasm, I'm going to go look at porn.
Right.
But if you can start to divorce that pornography and masturbation,
mm-hmm.
you can come back and start developing a healthier sexuality. Yeah.
Right. And actually, I am a strong proponent for couples to masturbate together.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
If she doesn't want to be sexual,
yes.
per se, why can't she be affectionate and be there with him
right.
if he wants to masturbate?
Sure.
What do you think, though, about having him take pictures of her and using pictures of his partner in that? Or is that a slippery slope?
You know, for some couples, it's a slippery slope. For some, it's acceptable. My personal take on it is that if it's something that helps you bond with your partner and the love of your life, go ahead. Have fun. But if it's something that drives a wedge between you two, then don't do it.
Right. So it's basically, can it help you as a couple?
Absolutely.
Is really what it comes down to. Yeah.
I think it's also really important not to make the guy feel like he's bad. You know, like this is, you're like a bad guy because you're doing this. You know, you're not a lech. I mean, assuming that it's not somebody who's a pedophile and is going after, you know.
No, men are victims of this industry just
absolutely.
As women are.
Yes, that's a really good point.
You know, the porn industry are such great marketers. They know all about cradle to grave advertising. They get you young. They get you when you're 11 or 12 years old. They get you watching porn then, and they have you for the rest of your life.
Sure.
And so men are just as much a victim of this, and it's a predatory industry.
Yeah.
So we need to help men understand that and sort of work around that as well as the women.
So a lot of our listeners have kids, and me included. I've got two boys. So this terrifies me. And so are there any thoughts that you can think of sort of how to prevent, you know, my young boys going into this, aside from putting on locks on the computer or something like that? I mean, is there anything else? Do we, you know, do you recommend having open discussions, you know, at a certain age about what they're going to see, or, you know, any thoughts on that?
Well, you can't protect your children from porn. The porn is out there, and there's nothing you can do to stop it, because you don't even have to be searching for porn in order to find porn these days.
Yeah.
You type, a child types an innocuous sounding phrase onto a search bar, and what comes up? Sex and porn.
So sad.
So I would say that this is an ongoing dialogue that you have to have with your children, is that this is really a choice between handing over your sexuality to this industry that's going to then dictate what your sexual tastes and preferences are versus developing it on your own. Because if you watch porn, if you choose to watch porn as a young man or a young person, a young boy, what you're doing is handing over your sex and sexuality to the porn industry, and they get to control that, and they decide, and they feed you fantasies, and they feed you niches of fantasies.
Right.
It's they're amazing marketers, and boys just don't have weaponry and tools against that.
Sure,
I mean, it's this whole arsenal of the culture going against you, right? Porn being available everywhere, right? And we need to have an open conversation, an open discussion with our children about porn. And also, we need to have men and fathers standing up to this and saying, look, this is a big deal.
So
this is
an issue. Yeah, right? They learn a lot through their fathers.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
I remember some clients coming to me and going, well, my father had like a whole closet full of videos.
That's exactly
right.
So my friends obviously wanted to come to my house so we could sneak those videos and watch them.
Sure.
I mean, just... Okay, so he was a huge influence on his children.
Well, this is very strange, but I used to babysit a set of twins, and the boy was probably, I don't know, maybe three or so at the time, and... like, I found out that he was, like, humping the ground. It was very strange, and his mom was very, you know, concerned, because this is just, you know, obviously learned behavior. Well, I would babysit, and I one time looked over to the couch next to me. There was a huge stack of porn, and he had, like, the Spice Channel or whatever that channel was. And so, you know, I'm sure the three-year-old came across it, doesn't even realize it's so sexual,
exactly,
but realizes, oh, I see what's going on here, and kind of imitates the move, and it was so crazy. And bless you.
So, don't do what Christopher does. He says bless you before I've sneezed, and I usually lose the sneeze.
That's so funny. I probably did it just at the same time.
There you go.
But it was just, it's really scary that, you know, the kids can really pick up on that kind of stuff really young.
Absolutely. So maybe it sounds like almost from the orientation of being brainwashed. I mean, there's nothing worse for a young boy to think that somebody else is controlling his mind.
Yeah.
And to be able to say, well, don't you want to stand up to that? Do you want to just get fed that and then lose control and not be in charge of your own sexuality?
Right. Yeah. Because you're 11, 12 years old. You haven't even had your first kiss. You haven't even had your first sexual experience. And by the time that you've had, you know, had your first girlfriend, you've already watched thousands and thousands of hours of porn, hundreds of hours of porn.
Wow.
And that's stolen from you. That ability to discover sex as if it were a new thing, that's taken from
you.
That
makes me so sad, because you're so right. Because I was thinking about it. I had my first kiss at 12, and it was really special, and I didn't, you know, no one anything else, and it was like so sweet. But you're right, I think if I was clouded with all of those images, it would feel like it wasn't enough.
No,
or
it
I'd
wasn't
feel
enough.
Like, oh my god, why didn't you know he do this or do right. that, or you know, oh wow,
where were the fireworks?
Yes, right.
Yes. Where was the standing ovation?
Where was the mystery?
Yeah.
Right, right. Oh my goodness,
that's
yeah,
so interesting.
It is this, I think this is just in our generation right now, this is the number one most important conversation that
sure.
people need to be having that they're not having.
Porn is the new epidemic.
Wow. I've even discovered just amongst my friends and stuff when I bring up this topic, mm-hmm. like at dinner or whatever, people don't want to talk about it. They're like, what's the big deal? Well, it is a big
yes.
deal. Then you become the preacher or the
exactly.
teacher. Or the,
exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, I don't want that role. But, you know, and I have been sent away from parties before because.
Well, and driven. But you know what? It says something, though, because I think of you as so liberal. And so if you have a strong stance on this, it shows like this is a really big deal, you know, which made me kind of open my eyes to it, too, when you sort of had that reaction. So I think it is helpful, you know, to stand your ground and sort of say, and it, but it's so true. I think it is completely normalized with everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not a prude. I'm a heathen in all other areas of my life.
Yeah.
But this is one area that I think that men should be leaders and stand up on and say, porn has negative consequences. Let's take a look at them. Let's not make this okay for our children, our boys to watch and look at.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was a big, a huge event in our culture, too, when men stood up against violence against women.
Absolutely.
You know, when women,
right, exactly.
Men, it was the men when they would put themselves forward and on
sure.
TV and speaking about this that, sadly, mm-hmm. that's when people start to take it more seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
But it, yeah, so I'm so glad that you're speaking about this. Give
Me
us, we
too.
Have a couple more minutes, so if you can share a few more words of wisdom, either about recovery, about the process, about yourself, and where people can get the book, what other resources are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, we'll take another 45 minutes and we'll...
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Okay, so, yeah, I'm Kevin McKinley. I'm Mr. Porn Free. I'm the author of Porn Free, How to Quit Porn and Free Your Left Hand. I talked to men about the hidden dangers of porn because... porn, there's a new mounting body of evidence that shows that porn is a cause of erectile dysfunction and relationship issues. And I show men how to quit porn addiction using research and tools from biology, sociology, and neuroscience. And you can learn more about the latest porn research at freelefthand.com/talkitout. Actually, I have a special page for Talk It Out. Listen.
Oh, I love it. That's so cool.
And you'll have additional resources there. And you'll be able to find out more about porn addiction and how to cure it and how to work with it.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
I guess the other question is, do you feel, or the men that you have spoken to, that they're always still just one step away from it? Or at some point in your recovery, do you feel like, I am really... Mm-hmm.
Done
away
with
from
us.
That. I mean, like, there's no seduction to it anymore.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So I would say that... it works until it doesn't work, or it doesn't work until it works. So you bang your head against this wall, and you're just going for years and years. You're going, God, I just wish I could just stop being a slave to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it starts to work because you found some combination of things that works for you that doesn't work for anybody else necessarily, right? But you found some combination of dealing with porn and porn addiction and your own ego and your own inner stuff
mm-hmm.
that now allows you to maneuver against porn successfully. So, yeah, I would say Mike Caro, who's a poker player, talks about the threshold of misery, where men are so beaten down. You're playing poker, and you've lost so much money, you don't even care about losing anymore. But it's at that point that you still need to play correctly. And that's the same place that men who have who are dealing with porn is that, look, even if you've relapsed, or even if you've had, mm-hmm. like, you've you know, lost a whole month to just using porn, try because you don't know when that next step is, and when you get that mentality that, look, this is a lifestyle change, this isn't just about one addiction or one behavior,
mm-hmm.
this changes your life, because you become, being porn free develops your character as a person, as a man. It teaches you a lot about yourself and, mm-hmm. and what you're capable of and what you can do and what you can stand up for, and I think that's important to know.
It's so
absolutely
wonderful.
Wow, thank you so much for all this.
Thank you for having
yes
me.
I love what
you're doing.
I absolutely do. You're such a pioneer in this whole field, and it's just incredible, and you're so brave, and I just love your story, and thank you so much.
Thank
really
you for having me.
Yeah, brave and smart and informative,
yes.
and all those good things. Yay. Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, Coach Kelly, next week we have a completely different subject.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. We have Dr. Rachel Melamed, who's a veterinary behavioral specialist.
Ooh.
So we get to talk about, well, I've got a lot of cat questions.
I know,
puppy
do.
Puppy cat and his little
I
biting.
Have five cats.
Yes, five cats?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, you got to tune in.
And if you have any questions, send us an email or give us a call during the show.
Sure. And she can answer them. And I have a question about my dog constantly is getting jealous. I got to talk. Like, I'll be playing on the floor with my kids and he'll, like, get jealous. I have, like, another kid. So it'll be interesting to hear what she suggests.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that'll be really fun. So we'll bombard her with lots and lots and lots of questions.
Cool.
And
subscribe iTunes too. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher.
Yes.
Make sure you download the show on there as well.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
exactly.
you for that. Are you going to be our new social media?
Yes,
guy?
He should be. He's so good. He's
Although,
amazing.
I do have a report. I started a month ago with 3 Twitter followers on my own page.
Excellent.
Yes.
I have 570 now.
Excellent.
Because
after
of what you've done. I love it. So cool. All right.
Okay.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.